The Procrastinator's Creed. I don't know if you've seen this or heard of it. Let me read out the Procrastinator's Creed. Number one, I believe that if anything is worth doing, it would have been done already. Number two, I shall never move quickly except to avoid more work or find excuses. Number three, I will never rush into a job without a lifetime of consideration. Number four, I shall meet all of my deadlines directly in proportion to the amount of bodily injury I could expect from missing them. Number five, I firmly believe that tomorrow holds the possibility for new technologies, astounding discoveries, and a reprieve from my obligations. Number six, I truly believe that all deadlines are unreasonable, regardless of the amount of time given. Number seven, I shall never forget that the probability of a miracle, though infinitesimally small, is not exactly zero. And number eight, if at first I don't succeed, there's always next year. Number nine, I shall always decide not to decide, unless, of course, I decide to change my mind. And last of all, number 10 of the Procrastinator's Creed, I shall always begin, start, initiate, take the first step, and or write the first word when I get around to it. Now, when it comes to the topic of more time, I do have a sneaking suspicion that if we're honest with ourselves, not having enough time 24 hours in the day, that may not be the exact issue. Yeah? I mean, the issue is, I think, probably we just don't know how to best spend our time. It has to do with priority. So this is very clearly the case if you are a time waster. If the 10 points of the Procrastinator's Creed hang up on your bedroom wall and that is just you to a T. It's not that you don't have enough time, you're just good at wasting it. But for some of us, it's more complicated than that. You know, like you do look at your day, right? And for some of you, it's like, you know, I don't waste time. I don't really procrastinate. And yet I really have so much to do that I don't have enough time. Well, on that, I kind of want to push back a little and say, is that really true? I mean, is it really true that it's still an issue of you don't have enough time? Or maybe, as I said before, it is the issue of priorities. I mean, just imagine this for a moment. Imagine this. You have only 1 year to live. You know that in exactly a year's time, on August the 24th, is it today? Right? 2012, you will just drop dead, all right? You know that for a fact. Would you really still then look at your day and say, yes, I have to do exactly the same as I have to do now without any change? You wouldn't, would you? Most of you would be like, why am I at uni? Right? Why am I finishing my 5-year civil engineering degree? What a waste of time. I'm out of here, right? Wouldn't you change what you do? Wouldn't you spend more time with your family and friends, write that novel you've always wanted to write? I don't know. See, it's actually false, isn't it, to believe that everything we think is important, that we must do, is actually important. We have no time because I reckon a lot of us can't make those distinctions. We don't know what really is important. That's why we can't prioritize our time. Now, I'm going to pose a question to you that I'm hoping that we'll solve today as we look at the Bible, and that's this. What if Jesus can change all that? You know, what if relationship with Jesus can actually change our view of what's important so that at the end of it, we find that we might have more time? Now, this is going to be important to you whether you're a Christian or not. I mean, if you're a Christian, you maybe never thought that your relationship with Jesus has anything to do with your time or how you sort out your time. But if you're here as a guest or you're not a Christian or you're not really sure where you are, then maybe you never thought that Christianity might have such wide and vast and practical implications. So I hope you get something out of it today too. So we have that passage read out to us. If you want to keep track of where I'm going, I've just got three very simple points. We've got two sisters. They're both friends of Jesus, but they had vastly different ideas about time and how to use it. Now, there's actually three characters in the story, but we're only going to focus on two because they're the ones who speak. So there's Martha and there's Jesus. So I want to just turn our attention to the first character, Martha first. Why don't you just follow as I read that passage from the beginning again. So the first sentence there, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Now, if I asked you which character or which of the sisters you identify with most in this story, I'll probably get the same response from everyone, yeah? Almost everyone I talk to identify with Martha. Busy, fretful Martha. Especially you older siblings. Who's a big brother or big sister? You know what it's like. I mean, who hasn't felt, even if you're not an older sibling, who hasn't felt the way she's felt? I mean, group assignments. Yeah, group assignments. You're the one keeping everything together. Everyone else is slacking off. Yeah, you feel it. That's how Martha felt. You go on a road trip with your friends. That's a sure way to test friendship, isn't it? You go on a road trip and you're the one doing all the research and all the planning. You've done the itinerary. You know, you've worked out how many Ks you're going to drive today. The rest of the group, they're just complaining, telling it, "Oh, chillax, come on, it's a, you know, we're on holidays." And you're like, "No, we got to make this." You know what it's like. But then you look at the story. Look, the first sentence. It's actually Martha's home, right? This is Martha's home. She's the hostess. Now, there's certain expectations when you're the hostess, especially if you come from a Middle Eastern or, for me, an Asian culture. Right? We're face societies, right? That just doesn't just mean I've got a big face, which I do have, but you know the whole idea of keeping you know a respectable kind of face, that's really important for us. And so you remember who watched MasterChef? MasterChef, you know, the Dalai Lama challenge. He had such an honored guest come to our country, take part in some inane, stupid show about cooking. But you do see how much effort they spent, you know, making sure everything was perfect for the Dalai Lama because he's such an honored guest. And, you know, half of them were breaking down in tears. The other half couldn't contain themselves and were wetting themselves because they got to meet the Dalai Lama. That's how exciting it was. That's what, you know, this is the honor of hosting, isn't it? So we can understand that Martha, being the hostess, having Jesus as her guest, she wanted to do her best, didn't she? It was a dinner party. It had to be the best it could possibly be. She wanted to make Jesus happy. And then she's got this sister, Mary, who's there. It's her home too, right? But at the very least, she's a helper, a co-host maybe. I mean, of course she would expect Mary to help out in the kitchen. But as we read, it's a bit surprising because this is not how the story plays out. Because Martha, the busy one, isn't the one that is commended, is kind of encouraged by Jesus. Jesus is going to turn the tables around. Now, why is that? Why is that? Well, I want you to notice, though, you might not have noticed it when you first read it, but what's behind Martha's fretfulness? What's behind her fretfulness and busyness? It's this, isn't it? She has to assume, and she is assuming, that in order to please Jesus, she needed to perform her duty as a host. You got that? In order to please Jesus, she needed to perform. And in this case, as a host. Now, we'll see why that's wrong in a moment. But for now, I want to say that this is a bit of a window to us. Remember, back to the time issue. As I said before, the issue is not really, we don't have enough time, hours in the day. It's probably for most of us, or perhaps all of us, we can't prioritize. Now, let me ask you the question. Why can't we prioritize? Isn't it, in large part, because so many of our priorities aren't chosen by us, but are chosen for us? Have you ever thought that? Have you ever looked at your life and its busyness and thought, why am I doing this? I can't stop doing it. I need to do it, but why am I doing it? How many of you are doing university degrees that you would not have chosen for yourselves, but your parents pressured you into? Yeah, all you Asians are nodding, aren't you? Yeah? I mean, why in the world would you do accounting? Rather get an enema. All right. Not that I've had that either. How many of you deep down inside would love not to have a casual part-time job that you're working on the hours that you're not doing uni work? That, you know, if you could just live off youth allowance and Aus study, you know, that'd be fine. But you feel like you have to have that job because if you don't, you don't have the extra cash. You can't keep the car. You can't keep up with the lifestyle. You can't go out and party. You can't save for holidays. Now, let me ask you, who says you've got to have that lifestyle? Do you see what I mean? I mean, there are plenty of people in the world, the majority of the world, who don't have disposable income. Well, who says you've got to have it? Who are you following? I mean, do you have to have a car? Do you have to spend money in order to have fun? Do you have to take overseas holidays? Do you have to update your wardrobe periodically? I mean, who says? Did you see what I mean? Whose standards are we actually living by? Now, I reckon this is the heart of the issue. That for almost all of us, other people determine what's most important, don't they? What are the must-haves in our lives? I didn't choose that. Other people have chosen it, and I want to go along with it. And so what does that make me? It makes me a person, if I'm honest with myself, makes me a person who lives for other people's approval. Isn't it? We want and we need approval from parents or peers or society or culture. And in order to do that, our desires and our priorities are shaped by all those around us. And we feel like we need to perform, don't we? We need to perform in order to have it all. The uni degree, the job, the leisure time, the hobbies, the family, the relationships, the future, the boyfriend, the girlfriend. Have you ever looked and said, I have no time because other people are controlling my time and I feel like I have to live up to something? Do you know the person who's completely secure in who he or she is, doesn't give a rip about what others think? That person will not be a person struggling for time. Yeah, you can imagine it. I mean, it may not be you, but you can imagine it, right? I don't care. I don't need a job. I don't need to live up to my parents. I'm happy with who I am, what I do. That person will not be the person thinking, oh my goodness, I need 5 hours more in the day. See, Martha is like us. She lives by other people's expectations of her. She feels that she needs to perform. And especially in this case, she needs to perform in order to please Jesus. Now, the problem is that she has Jesus all wrong. And that is the most liberating thing about this story. Yeah, let's have a look again. The sentence number 40. So you got, we're going to focus on Jesus now. So sentence number 40, Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and said, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? You can hear the bitterness and the anger, can't you? Tell her to help me. Jesus speaks, Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you're worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away. I love how, as if you've not read much of the Bible, I encourage you to read it, especially Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, because Jesus' words often do that. He just cuts right through everything. He's saying, you're worried and upset about many things. You see what? Jesus has just kind of zeroed in on Martha's problem. Martha's conflict is not with Mary. Martha's conflict is within herself. Yeah, she's worried about many things. She can't sort out the many things that are making demands on her time. But only one thing is needed, Jesus says. He's saying, let me cut through all of this. Let me cut through what you think is important. Let me tell you the only thing that is important. And he says, look at Mary. She's chosen it. Now, what's he actually saying there? If he's pointing to Mary, what she's doing, what's he saying? Jesus is saying, and this is really the crux, Jesus is saying, I don't need your service. I didn't ask for your busyness. But more than that, he's saying this, you don't need to perform in order to please me, okay? You don't need to perform in order to please me. You already please me. Because that's not the kind of Lord I am. You already please me. So you've got Mary there. Sentence number 39. She sits at Jesus' feet listening. See, this is the posture of someone who already feels completely accepted. Yeah? She's not here to please Jesus. She knows that she does already. So she's here to enjoy Jesus. And Jesus says she's got it right. Now, let's take a step back here. Jesus, as he says of himself, and the Bible says, is God become man. He is God incarnate, right? God incarnate just means takes on flesh. And this is a unique Christian mystery that God, the creator of the universe, became a man, and not just temporarily, like other religions have different gods, you know, kind of taking on human form, but then they go back to being God as soon as they can. No, not God, the God of the Bible. He actually, God the Son, actually became a man permanently. He's still and will eternally will be fully God and fully man. And from infancy through to adult life, through to death and resurrection, even to now, God takes on human flesh. And the important bit is this. How we relate to Jesus, therefore, okay, is how we relate to God. You got that? How we relate to Jesus is how we relate to God. And on this, Mary has got it right. Now, does that surprise you? Because if you are adhere to other religions, it should surprise you. Because it's saying that the God of the Bible isn't the distant God that you have to placate with your prayers or your sacrifices or your religiosity or your obedience or your service. That's Martha theology. And it's wrong. Instead, the God of the Bible is a different kind of Lord. He is the Lord who is not looking for your performance, but looking for intimacy. He doesn't need our service or sacrifice in order to please him. And again, that's a unique Christian thing. Now, why doesn't he need it? Well, here's why. Because he came in order to serve and sacrifice for us. He doesn't need us to serve and sacrifice for him because he's come to do it for us so that we would please him for all eternity. God is turning the tables on relationship with him. It's not Martha, but Mary that was right. You see, in verse number 38, the first sentence, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way. On their way, this part of Luke's account of Jesus' life is a little code. It's a little code for where this is all going. You see, most of Luke is a travel story, a travel narrative. And Jesus is on the way, and his disciples are on the way, and he knows where he's going, and that place is Jerusalem. Now, why is he going to Jerusalem? He's going there to die. He's going there to face his death, knowingly face his death. You see, the Christian message is this. When God became a man, he came to serve us and sacrifice himself for us. That's why Jesus was heading resolutely to his death. His death was to overcome the great barrier of sin, our rebellion against God and all the consequences and all the guilt and all the shame, that which stands between us and God, he dies to solve. He dies as a substitute. He trades with us in our place. And the reason he does this is because there is one person's approval that does matter. I mean, I'm talking about approval, yeah? You know, we live for other people's approval. We can't prioritize because we're living for so many people's approval. Well, there's only one approval that matters. And that approval is from God, your creator, your maker, and your judge. Right? We should care about that. But here's the thing. God has already done everything it takes for us to have his approval. That's the good news of the Christian message. You don't have to work for it. You can have it for free. You don't have to perform to please him. He did it all. So that if you're in relationship with him by trusting in Jesus' death, you already please him. You got that? You already please him. And some of you Christians here, you need to hear that. You already please him. You already please him. Fully. Completely. Because it doesn't depend on you. It's not based on what you do. Jesus has done it all. See, when you realize that, what do? You lay down your tea towels and you sit at his feet and you enjoy him instead. Do you see? You go from being a Martha to a Mary. When you understand that. Now, this talk was about having more time, and I'm finishing up now. Have you figured it out yet? See, if you get this, that in Jesus' service for you, you're already infinitely pleasing to God, infinitely accepted, infinitely loved, your priorities start sorting out, don't they? They start to change. Firstly, I hope you realize you're freed. Aren't you freed? Because you don't have to let others dictate your desires or tyrannize your time. You're not working for other people's approval. You've got the approval of the only person that matters in the universe. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't choose to do things in order to serve and love others. I'll speak about that in a moment. But here's the thing. You actually begin to choose. You actually begin to choose to do things. Not, I have to do it. I'm compelled to do it because I need and crave their approval. You see how different that is? It frees you. Now, if you get that, I'll bet you it allows you to change your time usage. Because you'll think, oh, this doesn't really matter in the end. I can drop it. Right? I can make more time for others. I can make more time for myself. It doesn't really matter because I'm not here to please someone. See, it frees you. Secondly, though, it also sets your priorities right. If you get this, it sets your priorities right. Your priorities will become Jesus first, others second, yourself last. Okay? You found the fountain of deepest approval and the satisfaction and the joy that comes from relationship with Jesus. And so you put him first. You live for him. You enjoy him. You delight in him. By the way, that's the Christian life. Like, a lot of people think Christianity is about going to church, doing the good things, you know, reading the Bible. That's not really. All of them come in the context of how do you grow in your enjoyment of Jesus. That's what the Christian life is. It's relationship, right? If I told you I'm married, I've been married 11 years, I've got 4 kids. If I told you that, you know, my marriage consists of me doing my chores, that's, you know, for my house, you know, my responsibility in the house is looking after the kids, as a dad, that, you know, every anniversary, I've got to make sure I don't forget it and take my wife out to dinner. If that's my marriage, you'd be saying, you have a pretty crummy marriage. Because that's not my marriage. My marriage is about my relationship with my wife. And these things are in that context. Okay, that's the Christian life. You begin to enjoy Jesus, right? And then the rest of your life is ordered as you learn from him. And so it becomes, you put him first, you put others second. That's pretty revolutionary. The Christian can't help but want to put others before themselves because that's what Jesus does when he comes into your life. And so you order your priorities around that and you think, okay, well, you know, it doesn't matter if I miss out because it's more important that someone benefits. And that, again, orders your priorities, doesn't it? Now, I want to suggest to you that a radical reorientation of your priorities, of what's most important, because you've found your security and approval in Jesus, that will bring you enormous peace, radical joy, and believe me, it will give you more time. It will. Now, at this stage, some of you, a lot of you probably are Christians, right? You're here and, you know, you are in relationship with Jesus. And my challenge to you is hopefully there's something there that you can take away with you. Reorientate yourself to the Jesus who wants him to be your fountain of approval. And maybe you've lost that. So there's something for you too. But for a moment, I want to speak to the people who are not yet Christians. And you might have been asked along here and invited, and you might have been curious because you just want more time and you thought, what did I get myself into? You know, let me suggest to you, if you think that what I've said is true and what the Bible said is true, that all it takes for this to be true for you is a very simple prayer. Praying is just talking to God, talking to Jesus. And I've kind of listed a sample prayer. It's not a magical prayer or anything like that, but it's the kind of thing you would kind of need to say to Jesus from your heart if you want in on this, if you want this kind of thing that I've been talking about, if you want to become a Christian. It's under point 2. Sorry, I got a bit mixed up when I was typing the notes. But have a look there. Just have a read of it yourself. We're not praying it just yet. But it's saying the kind of things that you would really say if you're willing to make this true for you. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to pray it. And if you think, yes, I can pray this sincerely, right, and I'm ready to find something in Jesus that I may not have had before, and I'm ready to be in relationship with him, have him reorientate my life. Well, as I pray it sentence by sentence, you might just want to echo it in your head quietly. You don't have to pray it out loud. Quietly to God or to Jesus as we're praying to him, right? If you don't want to pray it, that's totally fine. Maybe say something to God that's appropriate in your circumstance. Could be something simple as, I'm just not convinced, God. You know, you're going to have to do better than that. Okay? Doesn't matter. Just whatever is in your mind. If you're a Christian already, you don't have to pray it. You might be wanting to pray for the people around you or pray something that's appropriate in your circumstance. But if you want to pray this particular prayer with me, we'll do it now. And if kind of everyone can just look down so that we're not looking around us, I'll pray it. And then, pray it along with me if that's what you want to do. Let's pray. Dear Jesus, I want relationship with you to begin now. I'm sorry that I've ignored you and lived my own way until this point. Thank you that by serving me and dying for me, I can be accepted by you for all eternity. I want to follow you and enjoy you forever. Amen. I want to say to you, if you prayed that, and for you, that was a significant first time. I mean, you might have done something like that before, but it just never really clicked until now. But if that for you was significant, then, you know, great news. Congratulations. You are, as I said before, infinitely pleasing, forever having the approval of God because of Jesus, and that means everything. So congratulations. The Bible says God is so happy. He's having a party for you, right, that you will be enjoying for all eternity one day. You're a baby Christian, and we have to figure out ways to help you in your journey with Jesus, and we're going to get Tim to come and explain that in a moment. But I think what we're going to do is going to hear from one of the students, and he's going to quickly tell us about how he came to be in relationship with Jesus. Sweet.